Yo, this is Michael Franti from Spearhead along with
Era Radioactive.
And you're listening to Madison IMC Radio at madison.indymedia.org, a media revolution in progress.
No surprise in this time of war and in this corporate climate that the only independent media network in this country should face the kind of pressure that it did. What is more surprising is that the forces of democracy and of grassroots media won. I mean, in this time that is so dire, we're seeing very few victories. But listeners around the country said no, that we have to keep community radio in community hands, community control of our own media, the whole idea of we are media. And so ultimately, at Pacifica, that forced the resignation of the board. A new board was put into place, and we're moving toward the full democratization of our network, where local advisory boards are elected and then move on to choose a national board. And it's critical because at this time is, you know, just the right now what's going on in the occupied territories, what's going on in Afghanistan, the threats to Iraq. We need a voice and voices. We need a forum, a platform of international discussion that is not beating the drums for war, simply because the corporations that own the media profit from war. We need something else.
Now, Amy, when you folks were locked out of WBAI in New York, and when you had the progressive and radical voices of WBAI being shut off the airwaves, you went into exile, but you were still able to broadcast with the help of the New York City Independent Media Center. Talk about WBIX and how that related to the whole independent media movement.
Oh, I mean, it was so critical. Reem Kahuda and Errol Maitland, who formerly was the technical director of Democracy Now, but then after, and this was somewhat separate from what was going on at WBAI, was beat up by police at the funeral of Patrick Dorisma, the man who was killed by police. Errol and Reem, once the producers at WBAI, the Christmas coup, were forced out of BAI, the political purge of scores of producers, they just went online and they gave voice to those silenced political activists and political journalists, and also opened the airwaves, if you will, on the internet to new voices as well. And that's what kept, for us, Democracy Now! We were forced out in August. We went to a firehouse just blocks from Ground Zero. And that's where we broadcast from for 5 months. We broadcast at WBIX.org. And also because the first Pacifica station, KPFA, defied management and the board that was trying to close down Democracy Now! And they opened the back door of the Pacifica satellite, and they broadcast Democracy Now! For all the community radio stations around the country. And I have to say, Norm Stockwell and WORT were also a key to that, showing people, showing stations how they could rejigger their satellite so that they would be able to get the program. And that's what kept us alive, the ingenuity, the creativity of the grassroots media.
And also with us on the line right now is Sherry Herndon, one of the founders of the Independent Media Center. Sherry, first of all, Sherry, are you with us?
I am.
Great to have you with us tonight. Now, we don't want to hash out the history too much of the Independent Media Network. We're more interested now in how it's grown. I will lay out the fact that in 1999 at the World Trade Organization ministerial meetings in Seattle, that's where we had the birth of the Independent Media Networks. How have things changed since 1999?
Well, I think that's important for people to understand just a little bit in terms of that the history, so that we can then kind of just see a little bit more how things have changed and how they haven't changed and how the growth has been. But I mean, for Seattle to come together, it really was a coming together of a lot of different media streams. I mean, there was the video activist community, and the micro radio folks, and the computer hacker people, and the people who were making zines, and journalists of all kinds who came together to make that happen. And it was, I think, it's important also for people to understand that the IMC was built on the work and the efforts of a lot of different people doing independent and alternative journalism for a very long time, and that one of the things that indie media sort of represents as a kind of new shifting is that it's the activism that we're seeing is more of an integration with the movement and alternative media are coming together, and I think this is something that people are like it's changed things dramatically, but it's also a very exciting development, and some people have a little bit of a confusion about, are we activists, are we journalists, where's the line kind of there? The Independent Media Center was, you know, brought together by a lot of different people to make it happen, and there was
now a lot of the original Independent Media Centers were originally organized around various protests within cities for the last couple of years, but since then we've seen, especially following 9/11 and now with the crisis in the Middle East, we're seeing more daily coverage of just general global events on the Indie Media Network. Can you describe that a little bit?
I'll just answer your first question, is that the growth of the IMC is in the last 2 years and 4 months has gone from, as you were mentioning very early on, one IMC in Seattle to over 70 and a number of IMCs pending. Some of those have physical spaces. Some of them are just websites and in various stages of development. And the growth outside the U.S. Has been increasing. And the shifting from the IMCs that were event-based to more really being entrenched and in the community, I think, has been not just a challenging place, but also like because it's hard to do, basically. But it's also been one of the places where I think that our growth is going to, we're going to see even more exponential growth because of the fact that the community is going to see it more as a resource, not just for an event, and it's something that they can rely on, plug into, and people are still shifting in their minds that this is actually theirs, that it isn't these journalists doing the work. I mean, it isn't just about people producing media, it's about that these are places for facilitating media and people to become their own storytellers, which is another important part.
Now, Amy, you're still with us, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to ask you a question because I think you occupy a very unique place among journalists when you look at the corporate media on one end of the continuum and this citizen journalism movement that we've seen grow out of grassroots media and specifically out of the IMC movement. You kind of have that, you occupy kind of a space between both. You're not a corporate media journalist, although you are with an accredited, official, established news organization, but you work very closely with Independent Media Center citizen journalists. Could you give us a feel for,
immigrant journalists as well.
Yes, yes. And could you give us a feel for, the quality of coverage that you see coming out of, these quote-unquote activist journalists compared to what you've seen the corporate media do on the stories that you've been on?
Well, I don't think really the issue is activists or not. I mean, I see the establishment journalists as very much activists. They're activists for the establishment, and they are out there propagandizing for it. I mean, just look at the way the Middle East is framed. You talk about the Palestinian terrorists, and then you talk about the Israeli military. I think it is absolutely critical, if we're just fair and accurate, when you look at the Israeli military, if they are targeting civilians and killing civilians, it would be extremely accurate to say the Israeli terrorists. But that is not done. So I don't think the dichotomy is really so much about activism, because I see the mainstream media and the journalists. I actually just came from an extended two-hour debate I had with a producer at one of the networks about what's going on in the Middle East. And I said, at least concede that what the Israeli military is doing right now is terroristic. And to propagandize by calling just Palestinian suicide bombers as terrorists is completely unfair. I think what we have to be is fair and accurate. And the difference is that we cover events on the ground from communities. And I think that there are a lot of people who are better journalists that don't go to journalism school. That, for example, look at the Battle of Seattle. People went out there, hundreds of people, with their pens and their pencils and their tape recorders and the video cameras, and they wanted to show what was going on the ground. And you had CNN
saying through the day that no rubber bullets were being shot at protesters as we were picking up gobs of them, and the indymedia.org site was saying it through the day, and the indymedia site got more hits than CNN.com. And CNN was forced to retract after hours of denying it because they were there simply as stenographers to power, as you know, the voice for the police department denying they were shooting rubber bullets. In the end, they were forced to say, in fact, this was the case because their own reporters were getting shot with a rubber bullet. I don't really think the dichotomy is between activism and not. It's a matter of what voices you're bringing in, and it's all of our responsibility, and I think it's the corporate media journalists' responsibility as well, because they are using public airwaves. It's not just private channels that they're getting information out on. Like us, they use the public airwaves when, you know, in, for example, in radio or in television, and they have a responsibility to bring out different voices, not just cheerlead for the establishment, for the administration, like when it comes to Afghanistan, just cheerlead for the bombing of another country.
Well, Amy Goodman, thank you very much for joining us tonight. I know that you have to go, but keep up the good work there at WBAI in New York. It was great having you on board.
Well, thanks very much, and it's great to know that WRT is continuing to broadcast Democracy Now! I just think we have to join all the public media spaces together, public access television, the Internet, shortwave radio, regular broadcast radio. If we're going to have an effect on the conversation, the international and national conversation that goes on, we have to use all the public spaces and preserve them and not let the industry, the cable industry and the broadcast industry, just take over this as they are libraries, schools, etc. We have to preserve this critical place for people on the ground to be able to speak out.
Thanks again, Amy Goodman, host of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, back from exile, heard on WRT at 1 o'clock Monday through Thursday. Thanks again, Amy.
Thank you, John.
And line with us is still Sherry Herndon, and I want to get back to you, Sherry, because you've been patient while Amy's been speaking. I'd like to take a look now at the future of independent media. How do you see the network developing over time, and do you see it eventually replacing the commercial media?
That's inspiring. Yes, I do see it as replacing. Although what I have kind of have said in the past is that I think that what we're going to see is, as Amy pointed out in her last comment, is really a very critical point, and it's about strategy. And it's about strategy of activists, the movement, independent media people, and that we have got to be thinking about how we are creating networks of networks to preserve the spaces, just like environmental activists preserve public lands. We have to preserve the public spaces and also hook up our efforts. And so I see that that is a critical piece of growing our strength in a way that we can't do just as one. Like, indie media as a model is phenomenal, and I can go on and on about how fantastic it is, but we're not alone, and we need to be looking at our allies and others who we need to be working more in collaboration with. I think it's actually been somewhat of a weakness of indie media's, but it's not intentional. It's just it's hard work to do. But I actually see us not necessarily replacing them, but they're going to become marginalized because they are not actually representing the desires, the stories, the expression of resistance and creativity and creating alternatives as independent media is doing. I mean, independent media are not just documenting pockets of resistance. They are also showing very clearly examples of where alternatives are happening and where people on the ground are all actually creating democracy, like, for instance, Argentina. And Argentina.indymedia is probably the best space to understand what is happening on the ground down there, of any place probably on the planet. And I think that says something, because you're actually, you know, they're in the midst of huge struggles, so it's not to, like, paint a rosy picture at all. They have a huge struggle ahead of them, and they need a lot of solidarity. So that's my long answer, but I just think that they're going to become marginalized because they're not. People are going to realize more and more that there actually are viable alternatives, and I think that that was a turning point in Seattle where people before, it just was kind of this idea of like, yeah, we have a radio station, oh yeah, we have this little programming kind of thing going on, but they still just felt like the only alternative, the only option was corporate media. And with the IMC there, people just experienced it viscerally and physically every day, the fact that there was this alternative, and it shifted things in people's consciousness. And I think that's what's happening around the world.
Okay, thanks, Sherry. And also joining us on the line right now is Jenka from the D.C. Independent Media Center. Jenka, you folks are gearing up for a major mobilization there on April 20th. Could you talk about that?
April 20th to the 22nd, there's going to be a number of marches. I think there's five different marches and rallies planned. They're for peace and against racism. And a number of groups are organizing them. The IMC is also planning a convergence, and we're hoping for people to come in from all over. Hopefully, they're talking about tens of thousands of people at this protest. One of the protests is against the IMF and the World Bank. They're having their annual meeting. The IMC in D.C. actually started up during an IMF and World Bank protest in the year 2000 and April 16th, in which tens of thousands of people arrived here, and the IMC, kind of following the footsteps of Seattle that Sherry was talking about, started to mobilize around that protest. So the one coming up is actually a number of protests all together. There's a protest against the war in Colombia and the drug war, and there is a group from the Close the School of the Americas, and they're going to be gathering here, as well as the Act Now to Stop War and End Racism group. So that's April 20th, and we're hoping that a number of people will come down to D.C. for that.
Okay.
Both to protest and engage in spreading the word about the resistance to the war effort that's going on.
Thank you very much, Jenka, for the information. This is Vidi here.
Oh, hi, Vidi.
Hi, Jenka. And I'm with IMC India, as well as certain IMC groups out here in the U.S. I had a question for both you, Jenka, as well as Sherry. So the question was, so in addition to the struggles that indie media tries to address, you know, on corporate globalization, issues of sexism, racism, and more, how does indie media address these struggles within its own structural frameworks? I mean, how does it address sexism, racism, such issues within its own framework? How does it make the effort to be self-consistent with the values that it's trying to change in society?
Well, I guess I could start. I think as far as an actual political stance, I think there are as many political stances as there are people involved in indie media. And as such, everyone is at a different space in working on their own issues of sexism, of racism, of adherence to the system or resistance to the system. And so each person comes in from whatever place they're at. And so, of course, we have to work it out as a collective when we're trying to get stuff done. But I think that those are issues. You can't have an organization that is not a microcosm of the larger society, but I think that the IMCs that I've seen have done a really good job in trying to at least address people's personal issues and their relationship with the system.
And Sherry?
Yeah, I think it's probably one of our most critical pieces, as well as trying to figure out how we can create a structure that's a decentralized network. I mean, balancing those two together. I think we haven't actually had enough collective reflection. I think that we need to think about it as strategically, that in order for our work to be more effective on the outside, we really have to do the work maybe a little bit more intentionally, maybe a little bit more with some focus on where we are, as Jenka was saying, that we are a microcosm of what's out there in the larger society and why we have these ideals and these principles and values that we really strive to uphold, we do fall a lot. And I think that sometimes there's not the kind of actual acknowledgement of that that we need in order to move forward. For instance, I'll just quickly throw out some of my own personal observations as a woman in indie media. Some of the most fabulous people in the world have I met through this project and this phenomenon. However, the women's voices at the global level on the global lists is really minimal. It's very dominated by a lot of men and geeks who keep the digital network going fabulously. I think that we have to have more of an understanding of why there are less women on the lists, and we need to address it. We have the IMC Women's List. I think that we have a responsibility to actually be a little bit more proactive in coming up with and outlining a strategy for how to take on some of these issues as women, and how our own solidarity can help create a network within a network of feminine creativity and the kind of power and the communication skills that we have to offer. Because as I talk a lot about with people who are trying to understand what indie media is, and I think a lot of times they think of us as a digital network, that we're just hooked up by the website. We have a global thing and then 70 websites hooked up to it. Well, in reality, that's a digital network, and that's what is not going to be the threat and is not the threat to the status quo and the corporate powers. Where the threat is that we are organized and coordinated as a social network, and that means improving our communication from many to many and from all the nodes. And I think that that's where women's strength really comes in, and we need more of the women's voices in indie media. And I'm actually quite frustrated with the lack of women's voices, and I think at the local level it's probably better, although I know of numerous examples where women are facing really big challenges in new IMCs, that there isn't the gender balance there. So just as other organizations, when I was at the World Social Forum, and I'll end right here because I'm going on and on and on, there was a women's network strategy meeting the last day down in Brazil, and it was really quite inspiring. And one of the things that this woman was talking about from some sort of international NGO type, but very progressive, is that they had decided to implement that the organizations that they would work with, they would only work with those organizations that had gender balance or were working towards them. And one of the things they discovered after 2 years of implementing this policy was that the work in other areas was much more improved by the fact that they were having gender balance and in their organization.
One last question for both of you. This is John Anderson again. As one of these IMCs, I guess you could say, quote-unquote, out in the hinterlands of Madison, we've seen news reports and we've seen announcements on the IMC lists that people are starting to donate to the nebulous indie media network. Since it's not really hierarchical and there's not really a structure, we've heard of donations coming in to IMCs. It seems like because Seattle was kind of the genesis of all this, that people are donating to IMC Seattle, but we're talking about pretty large dollar amounts here. I think there's $20,000 from some other group. There was the recent pretty high-profile donation from Chumbawamba of, I think it was, what, $35,000?
Yep.
Sherry, could you talk a little bit, if you do know, like, where is that money going? And Janka, if you could talk a little bit about where you think that money should go? Because it seems that, you know, one of the things, especially here locally, we've tried to stay away from the whole dollars issue. We like working without a budget, but we do realize that money does help in some situations. And it's been a question that I think is kind of jumping around in the IMC network. Where is this going? How will it be spent? And how would people like to see it spent? And how can people get involved in giving input to the decision on how to spend the money?
And answer that long, long question quickly, because we only have a few minutes.
Oh, fine then. Okay, I'll try to be really quick.
First, it's only an hour, so.
First of all, the money that has come into the network, no money has come into for the network to IMC Seattle. since the very early days, just to make sure that it's clarified. All the money that's come in the last year that's been to the network, which we've had a donate at Indie Media email list for a year and a half or maybe a year and three quarters, and it's been sitting in a bank account. We actually have $47,000 sitting in a bank account that no one has touched because we lack a structure, because we lack a decision-making structure. The $35,000 is sitting in there. It was $12,000 before that. It's all been individual donations, one of $5,000. Some came from Direct Action Media Network that money was given to them. From the early days of A16, that money goes way back to there. IMC Finance is the list where the organizing is going on for that. There has been many, many discussions about the sustainability of a network and how to raise funds for a decentralized network, and then the even greater challenge of how to disperse them. And people are so caught up in wanting to make sure that we have a democratic process that all IMCs can participate in, that we actually haven't even touched that money. And there's a proposal that's currently out there that will probably be sent around to every local IMC list. We've been developing a contact database to make sure we're in good contact with each local. And there will be a finance summary and an invitation for a representative liaison, is the better word, because it's not a representative, to join the IMC finance list, and then we can begin discussions.
As far as where the money should go, I just have one thing to say on that, which is that just as new IMCs are, there's a question of how we're going to get new IMCs going when there isn't enough technical support. The focus on that is to bring in new IMCs that are in the Global South, and I think that if there's money involved, that's where the money should first go to, is to IMCs in the Global South and in regions in crisis like Palestine right now.
I want to just say really quickly on to Jenkins that that's actually been the general, there's been some proposals on the finance list, even though we can't implement them yet, that say exactly that, that there is a sense of that the IMCs in the North have more resources, and the IMCs in the South, to actually be able to start, they need the resources, and that we can kind of do a little bit of our own redistributing of the wealth to the IMCs in the South.
Well, thank you very much, Sherry and Jenka. It's been great to hear from you all and get your input. We definitely will continue to talk about the issues that y'all have brought up on this program. I think we're going to touch upon international issues with Indie Media later on. So,
I hope you do get IMC Palestine on the line. I was just talking to them, and apparently the Israeli troops are advancing, and they're very near where the IMC is located. We were on the
absolutely
line with them, and they're worried that they might be under siege tonight or tomorrow.
Right there, I'm on IRC, been on all day with Palestine, and they've got tanks right out front. They are an F-16 target as well, because they are in the building of a Bethlehem TV, which means that's a target.
Yes, I hope we can get through to them.
Yes,
well,
good luck.
Thank you very much for your work. Yes, thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Vidi.
Yep.
All right. Before we go on to some of the next guests we have lined up, we would like to tell you a little bit about an event coming up this week that will allow you, the consumer of media, to actually become the media. The Madison Independent Media Center, in conjunction with many other grassroots media outlets such as WORT and WYOU and the Insurgent Newspaper, will be holding a grassroots media open house. This will be happening on Thursday, April 4th. It's going to take place at the Electric Earth Cafe, which is located at 546 West Washington. Things should get rolling between about 7 or 8 o'clock. And what we hope to basically present to anybody who's interested is the broad range of independent media outlets that there are in Madison and southern Wisconsin, and also demonstrate how you, as a media consumer, can become a more critical media consumer and hopefully take that next step into becoming the media itself. We're going to have hopefully a computer set up where we'll be showing off the Madison Independent Media Center website. There will be a live open mic radio show happening from the cafe. We're going to be showing some documentaries made by independent videographers. The Insurgent is going to be on hand handing out copies of their paper and talking about what they do. And we're also going to open this up to basically anybody to basically work on anything they would like. If you'd like to be on the radio that night, all you have to do is grab the microphone. if you would like to take to the stage and talk about maybe your own independent zine project or something, feel free. That's what the night's going to be about. So keep that in mind and mark the calendar. Thursday, April 4th at 7 at the Electric Earth Cafe, the Grassroots Media Open House.
And Christian Knudsen is going to talk a bit about how you can get involved in the Independent Media Center.
There are many ways you can get involved in the Independent Media Center, but if you are excited by this talk right now about becoming the media, one thing you can simply do is go to the Madison Indie Media webpage. That's madison.indiemedia.org. And on either side of the center column, you can click on a little publish icon. And from that, you can just follow instructions and put any news up that you find interesting or any commentary or opinion that you'd like to share with other users of Madison Indie Media. So please visit that and please make your own media.
Okay, we're going to take a quick music break now, and then we're going to be back talking a little bit about the international perspective on the whole Independent Media Center movement, hopefully featuring folks from around the world, including the embattled IMC Palestine.
From the window in your office, can you see our toxic skies? From the papers in your office, the papers that you sign, papers in your office, to the next uranium mine. Watch your world die. From the window in your office. See our toxic skies. Did you believe the scientists who you paid to lie?